Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good morning. It's a Monday morning. I guess I can't really say it's, you know, as we're known for sunny Southern California, a little gloomy out. It's a Monday, but hey, you know what they say, we must go forward, things go forward, life goes forward, and that's just the way things are. So I guess I'm sharing that to say maybe I'm trying to get my motors running here. That's good. Anyway, that's a good thought. Well, welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Marvin Smith. My partner, Alan, who would be on the show with us today, is not with us. And Alan is, how would I put this? Alan is in the process of another film project. He got called out to the studios and dealing with finance for this next project. And, you know, since I'm not in that side of the world, that industry, I would have to say my partner, Alan, you know, who should be hosting, should be here with us today, is I think he has the bug, not the flu bug, but it's called the film industry bug. He, you know, he's excited about the work that he's doing, and it really is exciting. So anyway, he will not be here with us today, and hopefully he'll be back next week. But we will go forward, and we have an exciting guest on with us today. And you know, our topic today is really interesting. I don't think it's something that is old age. It's something that I think we need to, as Americans and as people, really need to take a look at. And you know, the theme is going to be, what does it take to get our children to read? And and it's going to be interesting when we listen to when we talk with our guests today. Well, each week this show will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, outright entertain you, while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in a constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. With each of us, Alan not being here, having over 30 years of experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and to work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are helping to keep your family, my family, mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. And we will continue to bring you some of the most incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Once again, I am your host today, Marvin Smith. Our guest today, let me share a few snippets about our guests. If I put my finger on it, I would say awesome. Awesome individual. So anyway, her name is Larice Moliniar. And I know she's going to come back and share some things. And her maiden name is Elawani. Did I say that right?
You got the maiden name right.
It's maiden
right. The last name is Molinari.
Uh-huh. Okay, there
you
we go.
You got
Molinari.
The tougher one right.
I got the tougher one right. Okay.
Yeah, you did.
Larice Molinari. Well, she has penned over 30 scripts for TV and film, including the critically acclaimed family classic, My Girl. Her debut novel, Either Vario Rising, was released in 2014. Larice lives with her husband and her two children in Los Angeles, the city of the angels, where her long life love for the heavenly guardians inspired her writings on a series of books about them. Now, here's some interesting information. According to the Huffington Post In some cities, literacy among fourth and eighth graders is as high as 73%. This sad state of affairs will never improve until students develop a love for reading, until they begin to read solely for pleasure. This is an issue, guess. I mean, this is, what is the future going to look like if our kids, our babies, they can't read? Where are we going? What direction? Where are we going with this? According to our guest, Larice, providing books that pique their interest can be the beginning of a lifelong interest for reading. She states, the only reward our children need to get them to read is to give them a book they will love. Hopefully a book with a story that continues where they can look forward to the next installment. Let's welcome our guest, Larice. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm good. It's Monday. Like you said, it's Monday morning. And
Monday. We're getting ready for a little bit of rain out here.
Yeah, I guess we do need it, right?
We need it better than the, you know, than what the Northeast is getting. So we'll take a little
That's
bit
true.
Of rain over a blizzard, you know.
That is true. That is true. But I want to thank you for being with us this morning. And I think I really believe the subject matter that we're going to dive into here is it's important. It's an important subject matter. And maybe you can give us a little background.
It's very important.
Yeah, well, maybe give us a little background about yourself and even what got you going down this pathway of, you know, you have over 30 scripts. So someone who writes a lot must read a lot. So maybe you could give us a little peek into your life.
Yeah, you know, as a kid, I have to say I wasn't the best reader. You know, as a young child, I read here and there, but I didn't really get hooked until it was a certain book. You know, that one book that sort of turned everything around for me. And I think I was in junior high, and I read To Kill a Mockingbird. And it was just one of those books that I could not put down. And it was because of that book that I started reading other books, you know, the whole domino effect. And then I really did become a reader. And then it just branched off into writing because I really wasn't great at anything else that I ever tried. I was a terrible artist. You know, I was the worst in the class. I played the violin for 3 years, and I was so bad at it that the teacher actually went to my mother and asked her to let me quit because I was ruining the entire orchestra, she said.
Wow.
You know, just I was an average athlete. I just couldn't do anything. I thought I was completely talentless. And then I was in eighth grade, and I wrote a poem, and I won a contest for it. And boom, okay. So I've got to stick with writing. And I've been writing ever since. And when I go back as a little kid and think about it, I was the one in the family car. We'd go on road trips entertaining everybody with stories, just making stories up. So I was doing it ever since I was a little kid, but I didn't realize it. So I, you know, went to college and I majored in journalism and I was going to be a journalist. And then I just didn't like that kind of writing. It wasn't creative enough for me. It's not what I wanted to do. So I went to New York right after college. I became an NBC page. And I started working on shows like Late Night with David Letterman and Saturday Night Live. And I got to know some of the writers there. And that was when I really decided I want to be a writer. And I befriended some of the writers on Letterman, and I would write jokes for them, and they would critique it for me. Tell you, this is good, this is bad, this is what works, this is what doesn't work. So then every year NBC has a writing contest. I don't know if they still do it, but back then they did it. And you would write either a screenplay or a teleplay. So I wrote a teleplay. And I did not win, but I was one of the runners-up. And that encouraged me. And then I sent the script to the American Film Institute, and I got accepted there. And that's when I really started getting into writing.
Wow.
And then that brought me to Los Angeles, packed up my car, drove cross country, got to Los Angeles, went to AFI, and I wrote a screenplay there my first year. It's a 2-year program for a master's. And after the first year, I had to write a screenplay, and I wrote a screenplay called Born Jaundiced. and it actually sold in between the summer of the 2 years and quickly got turned into the movie My Girl, so I never went back and got my master's degree. I started, I was a working writer at that point.
You kept going forward, yes.
Yeah, going forward.
Yeah, I have a question for you. You made a comment about a screenplay and a teleplay. What's, for us novelists that don't know these things, what's the difference?
One's for TV, one's for film.
For film, okay.
A screenplay is for film, and a teleplay is for television.
For television, okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just learning something
new
all the time.
Generally just a little shorter.
A little shorter, okay.
If you're writing an hour show or a half hour, it's going to be less pages.
Right, gotcha. Okay, it's good to know. Well, our question, then why is children's literacy and getting children to read highlighted in your promotion of the book?
Because I recognize that illiteracy is a huge problem today among kids, and it's something we really need to improve. The more kids read, the better they become at reading, and then the more pleasure they derive from it. And to me, books open up the mind, and they can make you see the world in a different way, and it creates empathy for others. You can make human connections through books. I mean, think about it. A book can truly put you in somebody else's shoes. You can see the world the way they see the world and understand things from their perspective. I mean, I go back to Kill a Mockingbird. I think that probably did more for the civil rights movement than we can ever know.
Right.
When you're seeing the world through Scout's eyes, you have empathy for people and you see what their life is like. And I think the world would be a better place if children would read.
As you're sharing that, I envision this. It's like these kids play these video games, and all of a sudden they're like, there's these shooting games or what. I don't play the video, but I watch grandkids and things. But you're almost like you have this person and you're walking in this maze, but you're walking through the eyes of this other person as you're going through. And as you said that, I visualize reading being the same way. It's like, which I understand that you're actually being able to see it through the eyes or lens of someone else.
Yes. It takes you to a whole different world.
Yes.
I had a teacher once, and I always remember these words. She said to me, if you can't physically leave your environment, you can always do it through books.
Through books.
And it's so true. When I first moved to Los Angeles and went to AFI, I drove cross country. I knew no one. Very lonely. And that's when I just started picking up Jane Austen. And suddenly I'm in England. Los Angeles isn't such a lonely place anymore when you're in England. And it really transports you to different worlds.
Right. That's good. That's true. About, that is so true.
Well, whether physically or mentally, you can't leave somewhere. Books will take you to those places.
Right. Well, there's the wonders of reading. It's so magnificent. There's this, like you say, it's a way. I mean, at times when I want to escape society, I pick up a book. I can read about anything or anywhere. It's a way of going somewhere, and I can't physically be there, but I can just get lost in the moment.
Yeah. There's a book I love called The Space Between Us, and it's about a woman in India. Suddenly, I know what it's like to be a servant in India.
It
just opens up everything for you then.
But see, the things that you're sharing, though, Larissa, is that as you and I are talking, I'm meditating, I'm listening to what you're saying, I can see it, I can visualize it, because, these are things that I do and things that you do and whatever genre of reading we like. But when it comes to a point, think about a person who is illiterate, who can't read.
Right.
I mean, all of a sudden, the things that we're talking about,
trapped. I think people who can't read feel trapped. And I think that's, to get kids to read more, it depends on the parents' involvement, I feel. Very few kids are just going to go and pick up a book. You have to start when they're in the crib.
Mm-hmm.
And, you read those picture books to them. And kids love it. And initially, when they're little, it sparks their imagination and it sparks this love of books. And I think when the child first starts to read, kindergarten, whatever age, 5 or 6 years old, some kids pick it up right away, and it's exciting to them, and suddenly all those little symbols on the page turn into words and turn into thoughts and then turn into ideas, and they're excited about it. But I think this is the breaking point for some kids, because the kids who struggle with reading, suddenly they shut down.
Right.
They, you know, it becomes a frustrating experience for them. And they see kids in the classroom who can read better than what they can. And then they don't want to do it. They feel embarrassed, and then it's not fun. It's too hard, and they make up all these excuses. So I think as a parent, that those ages, you know, 5 and 6 years, that's the most critical point to grab them to get them to read. And if there is a problem, okay, then see a reading specialist. Do what you can. You know, talk to the teacher. Get them over that hump. Because from that point on, you know, you want them to love reading and to love books. And I have two kids. My daughter was a fantastic reader, just obsessed with books, and I didn't have to teach her how to read.
Wow.
My son struggled with reading, and I just saw the pattern. One loved books, one hated books.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, too, even when you think about the dynamics of a family, two kids from the same household, but when you start to look at their temperaments and personalities and just how they approach things could be totally different.
Totally different, yep, totally different.
Yeah,
so I mean, the way we got over it with my son is that I, you know, we'd sit down and we would read, and he would go pick out books that I would have no interest in. You know, he would be reading Captain Underpants. But at that point, it didn't matter as long as he was reading, as long as there was a book in front of him and he was excited about it. And, you know, then in second grade, he fell in love with books called Bad Kitty. So he's reading Bad But gradually, you know, it turned into a fun experience for him. And then another big thing was that at night, my husband would read Narnia with him. They'd sit down and read the Chronicles of Narnia. Because, you know, at night, kids, they want your attention.
Right.
And if it's just the two of you and you're lying in bed and reading a book, A, it extends their bedtime, so they're happy about that. And
so
B, they have their parent all to themselves.
Yes.
And then you start sharing this thing, this world, this Narnia. Suddenly they're off in Narnia, and then the next morning they're talking about it, and they can't wait to get back to read more chapters. So it's something you share with your child and keep it going and keep it going. And eventually, I think it really will spark this love of reading. And it comes down to also just get them a book that they're excited about.
They're excited about, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, sometimes teachers assign books, and I just know that, they're not going to really like that one. And then it does become a chore. But they still have to do that. But when they're home, let them decide what books they want to read.
Right, right, yeah. And I think, you know, that's important, what you're saying, too, that it's all, and it's choice. It's giving them, first of all, they have an opportunity. They're creating, they're in an environment where now they get a chance to make a choice. It's their choice of what they want to read. It's not something they have to, they're being pushed to read. So that's another form of, you know, creating that love and that interest, because they take ownership. And then to be able to see them go through that process is just, it's like magic, as they say.
It is like magic. I mean, my daughter read Little Women, and she loved it. So she wanted the next book. I guess it was the sequel, was Little Men.
Uh-huh.
So we had to go to Barnes and Noble, and early in the morning, and the store wasn't even open, and she wouldn't let us leave. We had to stand outside Barnes and Noble for half an hour waiting for a book that was published 100 years ago. but that is, you know, the power of books and the love of books, and then the book that really did it was when Harry Potter came into her life.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, just walking around the house, tripping over furniture because she's
reading.
So engrossed in the book, reading it.
Right.
And that just opened up so much for her as far as that whole world of Hogwarts, and she loved it.
Yeah.
And to the point, she would come to the dinner table with her book, and I said, and I took it away from, like, you're not going to read at the dinner table. You're not reading Harry Potter at the dinner table. So cut to months later, she was so excited about it that I sat down and read the whole series. And there was one night we're having dinner, and I'm reading Harry Potter at the dinner table. She just came over and gave me a big hug and kiss and said, "Oh, I just, I'm so proud of you reading Harry Potter at the dinner table."
Wow. Yes. But, you know, I think I really feel, too, though, it's, you know, when you think about, as I'm sharing and I'm kind of just embellishing what you're sharing here and the excitement, I mean, the memories that go along with that. You know, you're encoding these memories, too, that memories of a lifetime. Like, you know, like you say, waiting in line for 30 minutes to get this 100-year-old book. I mean, that's something your daughter and you, I mean, will never, it's an experience that you guys had a chance to, something to experience, that it's one of those moments in life that you'll never forget.
Yeah, I'll never forget that.
But it's continuing to shape that memory. And here we go back to that love of reading. All because of, you know, someone's getting excited about literature, reading. Which is great, which is really good. Now, a question. Now, how does your book engage young readers? I mean, if...
Well, I think it's the characters that grab a kid's attention.
Okay.
My main character, his name is Vero, and he's a 12-year-old boy that kids can identify with.
Okay.
He's a lot like them, but he's also intriguing to kids because he's different. I mean, the big reveal is he's a guardian angel. And I think kids become engaged because they care about the main character and they want to follow them. They identify with him in certain regards.
Right. And I think, too, as you're saying, the guardian angel, and I'm sitting here listening, I haven't read the book, but I mean, you know, I have some experts, but it's almost like it's like the protector, you know, when you look at even some of these superhero movies that they're kind of based around this, you know, the villain, the good person, the good, you know, it's that to protect humanity and mankind. You know,
right. And you know, they are the fiercest of all the warriors because think of who they're battling.
Yes.
All right. It doesn't get any more scary than that. I mean, they're more fierce than the vampires and the wizards and the angels are.
Right.
You know, they are warriors. And to have a kid who's a 12-year-old warrior like that, it's empowering to kids that they feel, oh, my gosh, there's somebody like me who's out there doing all these great things. I want to be like that character.
Yeah, that's good. That's true. Mm-hmm. We see ourselves, we start to identify ourselves sometime. Well, not sometime. I mean, a lot of times when we're reading, we start to identify ourselves in characters. You know?
Yes.
And
you see traits of a character and say, oh gosh, I do that. You know?
Right. That's true. That's true as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that is a big success for a lot of the fantasy kids books that... Even though the world can be pure fantasy, the characters are very realistic on many levels.
Right, right.
You know, you have to keep them grounded.
Right.
So that there's that identification.
Right, and that's good. Well, let me ask, you know, when I start thinking about, you know, literature again and writing, I mean, what's the big difference between writing, and then you kind of touched on it earlier, but, you know, for screenplay and writing a novel, what's, you know, you got the two worlds here. What do you enjoy? I mean, where's your heart and passion?
Well, I actually am passionate about both. I really can't say I prefer one over the other. They're just very different. I mean, in a movie, for a screenplay, you have 2 hours to say and do everything you need to get done.
Okay.
Whereas a book, I can go off on a tangent. If there's a minor character and I find them interesting, I can write 10 pages on them, and it doesn't matter. You know, they're funny, they're quirky. But in a screenplay, sorry, you've got 2 hours. I can't do that. So in a way, a book is much more liberating than a screenplay. But what they both share, the heart of it is a good story. They both have to have a good story, and they have to have interesting, good characters, or nobody's going to watch.
Right.
Or nobody's going to read.
Right.
So,
right.
And then the physical, it's more descriptive. A book is much more description. A screenplay, you don't really put much description in. You say Los Angeles, 19, whatever, whatever, and everybody knows what it looks like, and you just continue on. But in a book, you describe your world. You know, and a reader uses their imagination when they read a book, whereas with a movie, you don't really use your imagination.
Right,
you know,
right.
You're being shown everything. This is the way it is.
Right. And I that takes me forward too to, you know, looking at a question as I think about as we're sharing, you know, your reason you approach this story for the page instead of for the screen. I mean, so, I mean, as I'm thinking about that, I mean, because you could have taken this, the book, and you could have created it for the screen. And what was it? What's the difference? I mean, why? I mean, one, because you, like you say, either or. When it comes to writing,
for this particular project, it actually did sort of start off with it with the intention of doing it for a TV series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my husband and I had actually, you know, we pitched this idea to Hollywood. We only went to one place, and we didn't set it up. And then the story just stayed with me, and then I just sat down and started writing it as a book.
As a book, okay.
And, you know, and a lot of the ways movies get made today, they're a book first. You know, the studios like to have an audience that's already built in.
Right.
And, you know, they usually go that route now today.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, go ahead, I'm sorry. See, you got me. I'm just sitting here, Larissa. As you're talking, my mind is just, I'm going all these different directions. I'm just like, oh my God. So, and, which is really good. I mean,
that's
really great. I'm like going, sitting there going, okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about, okay.
Well, are you a big reader? What are you reading lately?
My life is so entrenched. Right now, what I'm reading is, it's more technical. I'm reading more about this public education from the standpoint of board governance and charter schools and pedagogy, and it could be very boring on one hand. But most of my reading, the bulk of my reading is in that vein, because it's about, I'm looking at how do I create system? How can I be part of systems that kids can have this fun or this luxury that I had growing up? Especially when I start looking at some of these underserved communities where, unfortunately, families, you know, it's not, there are some family dynamics, and the kids don't have that luxury. So how can we create within public education and systems that can afford these kids these experiences that I had growing up that have shaped me to be the person I am? So, I have a shelf of books, and I keep saying, one day I'm going to get to all of these books.
Right.
I mean, it's just...
You will.
Yeah.
You will. You know, I mean,
it's
we were talking briefly earlier about all the different distractions to reading.
Yes.
And a lot of it, so much of it, which I see with my kids, is the internet.
Yes.
And that is really tough. I mean, this daughter of mine, who was this voracious reader, as soon as she turned, you know, around 12 years old, suddenly she stopped reading when she discovered Instagram and texting her friends. And it was very disheartening to see that. And, you know, suddenly like a video of their friend sliding down the staircase becomes more interesting than reading Jane Austen.
Like, you mean you deal with that too?
Oh, sure. Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. So, you know, honestly, this kid went from sneaking books under the covers, reading at night, you know, with a flashlight, to not reading at all.
Yes.
So that presented a new challenge of how to get her reinterested in reading. So my husband and I had to start limiting the time on the electronics.
Electronics, yes.
But which is really hard to do because her textbooks are all on an iPad. So teachers are kind of making it tough now. A lot of these schools where all the books are on the iPad, you can't just take it away.
Right.
It's like, I'm studying on this.
Exactly.
And you can't really tell because you're not going to stand over them 24/7 to see if they're studying or texting their friends.
Right.
So that was a whole other challenge. So, you know, you go back to start bribing them to read, taking it away, and it just feels like punishment, and you want them to love reading. You don't want to force them to read. So what did it for her again was I just took her to the library, and we just spent time in the library or a bookstore. Yeah, and then suddenly when you are browsing through the books and you're holding them in your hand and you're reading the jacket cover, and, oh, this sounds interesting, suddenly we left the first day with 6 books. And she started reading again.
Yes.
You know, we're like, oh, she's come back to us.
It's like, right.
Not that she still doesn't get on Instagram, but when she found a good book, she was motivated to read it. And I think ultimately that is the bottom line. You just give them a good book.
Right. Yeah, and I see, you know, even as you're sharing that story, I mean, I see as a backdrop is there was this foundation in place. So reading the heart, I mean, reading was something that was already, I would say, part, at this point, part of her DNA. And she, you know, she had a love for reading. And it's just getting back on track or getting back in that direction to, you know, go to that, I call it that first love to read. And usually when an individual finds something that they're good at and they love it, you know, we may be distracted by the ways of the world, but it's, you know, being able to get them back on track or back in that direction. I mean, because the social media and all that stuff is not going away. But I think, too, as parents, is putting being able to have, like you said, too, Larissa, is being able to have some restrictions makes a difference. And but, yeah, like I say, I think that a part of this, too, is that our kids are, you know, even as parents, the kids are competing. There's so much going on in their lives. It's not like when I was a kid. Maybe when you were a kid, I mean, it was very, you know, either you play sports, you did your schoolwork, and it was very limited. Now it's, I mean, you have kids that don't even want to go out and exercise because they're so glued to this electronic device.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, even when kids have a play date, you bring other kids over to the house. Ultimately, they all wind up on the computer or playing on the Xbox. Instead of just going outside.
Going outside. And
it kills their imagination. It really does. I mean, because I was a kid, I grew up way out in the country on a lake, middle of nowhere. And half my childhood was just spent walking in the woods by myself, lying on my back, looking up into the sky. Kids don't have that today. There just isn't that downtime. And a lot of the schools are even, you know, extending the school year so that they only have basically 6 weeks off in the summer.
Right.
And I feel like they need that downtime. They need to go to camp and rediscover nature and sit with a good book and just read. And that's a big problem. And another thing, too, I mean, I hear from the whole gamut. Some parents say their kids don't get any homework. I haven't found that to be the case. My kids get so much homework that I think some of that also kills the love of reading.
Right.
Because when you come home and you have 4 hours of homework a night, the last thing they want to do is pick up a book and read. They're brain dead.
Exactly.
So there's got to be some kind of compromise there, some kind of a happy medium.
Well, it's just you keep saying these things, it just brings memories back. And, you know, going out, I can remember, you know, growing up and going out on my lawn and, you know, during the springtime and just laying on my back and watching the clouds go by. Talking about imagination. And I used to imagine, I think I saw my wife not too long ago, she says, you would think that way. But it was, I would see a circus, like the clouds would go by and I'd imagine it's a circus. And I see the different animals in the clouds go as a circus went by. I would enjoy that time to sit there and just, you know, imagine.
Yeah, just let your mind go.
Mind go, yes.
And I always think that great creativity comes from those moments.
Yes.
It's those moments. It's not the hustle and bustle of everyday life where the great ideas come from. It comes in the downtime.
Yeah, I think, which is so true because, you know, there's a study that came out, and it was talking about Disney. Disney they call them Imagineers, the ones who do a lot of the creativities for design and development. And what they would do every Friday, they would actually go do something totally non-related to their job so they could keep the creativity and imagination going forward.
Yeah.
So they can they can continue to make, you know, keep Disney this magical place. You know, because after a while, you know, it's like you've probably heard this, being a writer, this whole writer's block, you know.
Trust me. I know all about that.
there's just nothing there, you know. And you're right, and it's that creativity, being able to get out and do things differently, and all of a sudden it unlocks the imagination.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
And that's good.
Kids today are so structured, and not only are they so structured, they're always under the supervision of an adult, seems like it.
Right.
You know, they just don't let the kids just don't go out and ride their bikes anymore and explore the wilderness. You know, they're always you've got gymnastics from this hour. Then I have to pick you up and take you to swim practice, and we have to go. You know, they're always just structured and under the supervision of parents. You know, they just never have that downtime to explore the world on their own.
Yes.
And if they can't do that, well, then at least they can do it through books.
Yes, that is true. That is so true. Another question for you. You know, as a screenplay, as a screenwriter, you know, classic family films, My Girl, the Brady Bunch movie, what do you think teenagers are entertained by? Is it really possible that they like, crave, are inspired by family films?
Teenagers?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they are, actually. I think, at the end of the day, the studios want to make family films because most people do want to go to a movie where everyone in the family can sit there and enjoy it. Personally, I can't take any more just little kid animated movies. My children, you know, there are certain ages where they love them, but I enjoy a movie, let's say something like The Blind Side, where everybody can get something out of it. And I do feel that kids like family movies more than really anything else because it's something that they can share with their parents and with their siblings.
Yes.
It's an experience that everybody shares and everybody enjoys.
You know, I was just going to say the same thing. It's the family movie is, even myself, I mean, when I try to get our family together, I always try to find a movie. If we're going to look at a movie, I like to get something that we all can watch and then to me, then talk about afterwards, you know, hey, what did you get from this? What did you learn? And make it not just a movie, but a time of experience with family and learning, you know, and how does that apply to your life? And really, just really embellish it more for the standpoint of, you know, create these connectivities. And then for each individual within the family to push them off in a direction that they become more enthralled, that they can either go reading more about something, but just something to continue to enrich their life. Right.
I mean, for books, it's awful because sometimes we, you know, as a family, we'll all read the same book.
Same book, okay.
And then have a discussion about it and then talk about this and that and what do you think of this character and, you know, and it really does spark conversation.
Well, you know,
I just got an email the other day from a mom whose kid read my book, a little 10-year-old boy, and she loves the fact that, because the book has, it's angels, so there's some spirituality in it, she loves the fact that he's coming to her with questions about that now, and questions about God, and opening up, you know, that whole discussion. And that's what books do, you know, that's
discussion, right.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, let me ask you this then, you know, when you start to think about, I mean, there's so much is going on here. It got me just, I'm enthralled. But okay, when I think about this, Reese, and you know, as you look at children and literacy and reading and this whole, I mean, it is, as we talked about at the top of the hour, I mean, we talked about, you know, it's an issue for America. Our kids are not reading.
It is.
It's a major issue.
Kids are not reading.
Yes. And, you know, so my question to you would be then how do we get our children to read more? I mean, how do we, is there a trick? Is there, I mean, what do we, what's the key? I mean, what do we, if I can
There's
tell
no
some
trick.
Educators. Okay.
I mean, there is no trick. It's just, honestly, it's just giving them a book that they're excited about. And I guarantee you, they will get swept up in the book. I received an email from a 10-year-old boy the other day. He just read The Ether. And he said to me, he said, quote, "I'm not a reader, but your book inspired me to read more." And I think that's what it comes down to. Just give them a book that they like. And then they'll want to read another one. And then another one. You know, and it just keeps going. And I also think that as a parent, you have to lead by example. You should always have a book in your hand.
Right.
You know, when I...
Right.
You should always be reading. To show them that it's fun. It's something that, you know, they can do their entire life. I mean, when I pick my kids up from school and I have to wait in the carpool lane for a half hour before, I've got my book. You know, it's like when they're at the dentist, I've got my book. You know, it's just always have a book with you and show them that you enjoy reading.
You know, I always say with a behavioral background, and what you just stated, you know, we use the term behavioral modeling. You know, you got to model the behavior. Because a lot of times, you know, we make this comment about it's not so much what's taught, it's what's caught. And otherwise, yeah, it's what they're watching. You know, you could say something to a kid, you know, that old saying, you could talk until your hair turns blue. But if you're not doing it, if they don't see you doing it, then it's just talk.
Right.
Same thing I see in classrooms at times. I would see teachers saying one thing but doing something else. And then they would understand. They couldn't understand why are the kids not getting it. I said, are you modeling it?
Mm-hmm. Kids, you know, modeling, see everything.
Yes.
They're like little spies.
Yeah, and little sponges.
Spies, yeah, they are.
And sponges. You put the two together. Yeah. It's a powerful agent. You know, for the right direct. You know, if it's used properly.
Yeah.
You could turn them into. I like what B.F. Skinner said. You know, the famous psychologist. It's like, you know, their minds is like tabula rasa. It's a blank sheet of paper, and you know, you have the ability to write anything you want on it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yep. So true.
Interesting. I can't believe. I'm looking at the time, and I just can't believe we're like. Time's almost over. I'm like.
Now,
do you remember?
Do you remember what were some of your favorite books as a kid? Did any come to mind?
I can't think of any particular, but I just loved. When we had reading time, I would, you know, I used to love when I was at, you know, the grammar school, at times when the teacher would have reading and she would read to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'd have individual, I don't know, you know, it's like, I remember that more than anything else. It was just something.
Yeah, kids love to be read to.
Yeah, it just, and it was like a story, it was like story time. It was like, okay, and this was kindergarten, I can remember, you know, so all of a sudden she's reading these stories and you would see your, I mean, I'm looking at my age. It's so vivid to this day. It's one of the things I think in my early education that I have not forgotten. And that, then coming home to having parents go, you know, reading at night, and then me reading to my little brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, you know, I can't think of it. Read so much. I can't think of any particular topic or you know, book itself, but it's just I remember that so vividly.
Yeah, I just remember reading.
Yeah. And what about yourself?
I was a big Judy Blume fan. I remember a book I loved called Tales of a Fourth Grader Nothing, which, it, you know, you don't get in the bookstore. My kids still read that one. I loved Judy Blume. And then there was a book that no one will have ever heard of. It was called Fitzko, the Wild Dog of Central Park.
Wow.
I loved that book. It was about a true story of a wild dog in Central Park and how a couple took the dog in and tamed it and taught it to trust humans. And oh, that's such an impact on me.
I can imagine. I mean, yeah, you're right. But here we go. The story of literature, story of books, it just shapes. I mean, and, you know, it shapes us. It really does.
Yes, and it teaches you about the world. There's a series of books. Oh, I can't remember what's the name. Rise to Rebellion. It's all about American history during the American Revolutionary War, but it's told sort of as a biography from the characters. Suddenly, Ben Franklin's a character. Thomas Jefferson's a character, and reading those books to me, because you're reading it as a story.
Right.
I learned more about the American Revolution than I did in all my years studying it in school. Because when you're just studying the facts, you know a little bit.
Right.
But when you're studying it as a story through the eyes of these characters who actually shaped our country, it stays with you.
Right. Well, and I think here we go back to that behavioral side again. Paired association. When you compare, you know, if you look at historical facts and it's paired to something of interest, then it's that story around it that shapes it, that really, you know, solidifies the memory versus looking at just facts and figures.
Right. Right.
Which is really good. Yeah. I'm amazed. We have 5 minutes left, and it seems like we just started. Like, it's really good. But I have a few questions from some of our call-in listeners, and I definitely want to approach these before we get off the show. And here's one. It says, as a junior high English teacher, I can attest to the fact that literacy is a dramatic problem with our youth. By the time they reach my classroom, they should have basic reading and spelling skills. which unfortunately is not the case. I care about the future of my students, and I am anxious to discover ways to remedy this travesty that I am that I'm tuning into this show to program today to learn more about this topic, as I, too, believe the appropriate literature could be helpful. Anything in brief on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe a way to do it is have the kids in the classroom each bring in books that they love, and maybe if that's going to be their, have the kids vote on the books for the summer reading or whatever the classroom book is going to be for that semester. So maybe if they choose, that would, you know, they would feel a little more empowered than instead of the teachers just assigning something, hey, we chose to do this book. And,
yes.
Yeah, I see it in middle grade. I mean, middle grade is tough.
Yeah.
you know, kids can be just downright awful to each other in those years.
Yes.
You know, the hormones are going crazy.
Yes.
And I kind of feel that's when kids need books the most. Because
okay.
when, you know, the bullies and all the stuff is getting, you know, getting on their nerves at school, at least they can have these books at home to escape into and to read and to, you know, help them feel better about themselves and read about other kids who are in situations like themselves.
Right, right. Thank
yeah,
you.
The middle school is tough.
Yeah, it is. And here's another one more question, and then we need to close up the show here. But says our listener says, can you please comment on how visual media, and you touched on this already, Larissa, a little bit, TV and movies specifically may be interfering with our youth picking up and enjoying a good book. Are my observations correct in assuming that the future generations are going to be devoid of the love of reading?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, a lot of that is true. It's like, it's just what we were talking about. It's all too distracting. And my suggestion is keep the TV off as much as you can. Because if you're watching TV, if it's on in the background, your kid's going to come in and sit down and start watching. My kids, I'll be having a conversation with them. The TV's on. They're not paying attention to me.
They're not paying attention. Right.
Yeah, they're just not. And you have to turn it off. You know, you have to keep the computers in one room. Try not to let them, you know, walk around with the iPads and all that. Try and keep them in one room. So that you limit these things, you turn them off so that they will read. And you take them to the library, you take them to the bookstore, let them just buy what they want and read. You know, and like I say, it may not be a book you're excited about, but if they're excited about it, let them read it.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's the only way that we're going to solve this problem.
Yeah,
because
well,
like you say, it's going to get worse. I mean, there's just
yes.
so many, you know, you can't go anywhere without electronics. Like, they all have their smartphones. It's very distracting.
And one thing I see parents using them as babysitters. They put these things in front of them. You know, they have these little games or movies or whatever they're watching, and they just let it. It's like it's entertaining them. I mean, it's going back to that latch kid key, but now they're utilizing electronics. And so,
it's interesting. It's absolutely true.
It's going to be really interesting how things get shaped in the future. But when we have individuals like yourself who are continuing to write these exciting books that you know, strikes a chord of getting middle schoolers excited about reading, then that's at least that's a big help. And we need more of it. And I just want to commend you, Larissa, on the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
I can't believe we have ran the gamut on this show. So
it was fun. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, really, we have to get you come back again because so much information, and get you back on the show when Alan's around. So since he's a movie buff too, he and an avid reader, he'd probably have a lot to say as well. But once again, this is Answers for the Family, and I am your host, Marvin Smith, and our guest today was Larissa Molinari. I got it right.
Very good.
I got it right. And Larissa has, anyway, so our listeners may be able to contact you if they want to find out any information.
Sure. My website, it's larissamolinari.com for the Ether series.
Okay, and that's Larissa Molinari, and that's LarissaMolinari.com. Larissa Molinari.
Larissa Molinari, yeah.
So, I thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed this, and I think I'm going to read a book right now.
Very good. Lead by example.
Yes. Anyway, have a good day, what's left of it, and we'll be talking to you later.
Thank you, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith right here on LA Talk Radio.